Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning visit with Dr. Kevin Most, the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine's Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning, Doc. Let's talk about allergies first. The season is here. It's early, isn't it?
Yeah, Bob, it is. It's a little early. Days like today are certainly going to help people with fall allergies just because of the rain. But not only is it early, it really appears that it's going to be a pretty substantial one that appears that it's going to go on for a while. So individuals with runny noses and itchy eyes now saying, wait, why is this here now? It is here and time to start medicating for it.
Anybody have any ideas as to why the allergy season is early and extended?
Well, you know, we had some great growing weather, unfortunately, for ragweed and nettle. So the two of the biggest components there. So that's probably the biggest reason. We saw pollen counts up across the country. I mean, even last week we were as high as, I want to say, close to 10, and that's on a basis of 0 to 12. We dropped down. I just checked this morning. We're down to 5.8. So certainly today the rain is going to knock a lot of this down, but it'll come back up as soon as all this rain dries out.
And what do you suggest as far as minimizing the symptoms?
Well, a couple things. One, obviously, is people who have allergies now know to take the non-sedating antihistamines. Certainly I wouldn't say, Benadryl is a great antihistamine, but 50 milligrams of Benadryl will put you to sleep in many cases, so I would say stay away from that. But go with the Zyrtec, the Allegra, the over-the-counter non-sedating antihistamines. Get on them now, even if you haven't noticed the allergies kicking in yet, because that will certainly help. And then probably one of the biggest things, the weather's been so nice. We spent a lot of time outside. When you come back in, change your clothes, because now you're bringing that allergen back into the house setting where you probably have already built filters and HEPA filters to minimize those allergies. Don't make it more advantageous for the allergen to find you in the house.
Just when it gets cooler out and I want to open the windows, my wife has allergies, so I'm forbidden from opening a window in the house.
Yeah, you need a good freeze, and that's not going to be for a while.
Yeah. Bruce Springsteen was in the news recently because of peptic ulcers canceling the cause of the cancellation of his concerts. How common is this, and what exactly is a peptic ulcer?
Yeah, it's extremely common. I mean, about 10% of people sometime in their lifetime are going to have a peptic ulcer. And a peptic ulcer is essentially an ulcer, a lesion in your stomach where the acid, which is normally well protected by the lining of the stomach, for some reason has gotten through that lining and now causes irritation where there are nerves and unfortunately blood vessels as well. And that's what causes the ulcer portion of it.
And what can you do to prevent it? And if you have it, what can you do to minimize the symptoms?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Going back to even my residency days, we thought, all we have to do is block the acid and everything will be fine. And what we actually have found is that the vast majority of these cases are caused by a bacteria called H. pylori. And then that bacteria gets in your stomach. For some reason, the acid doesn't bother it as much as it bothers other bacteria. It's allowed to multiply and then cause irritation in the stomach, which then leads to an ulcer. So really, probably one of the biggest things is, one, if you start to have symptoms, get in to see the doctor. He'll do the H. pylori test. There's a couple different ways that they can do that. If they find out it's positive, then we put you on a couple of medications, and after a very short period of time, the lesion has healed and the pain is gone. Now, individuals who smoke, drink alcohol in excess, those are not due to H. pylori or under a lot of stress. Those are actually ones where you're going to have to take some medication potentially for a long time, whether you're going to slow down the secretion of the acid or whether you're going to block the acid. So, Bob, it's amazing. If you look at our stomach, the acid in our stomach has a pH of anywhere from 1 to 3. So think about that. That's the strongest acid possible. and you're walking around with it in your stomach. So just amazing how the body works. And we also have to understand that the acid in the stomach is a big defense mechanism for us. If we ingest bacteria or we ingest a virus, often those bacteria and viruses are eliminated just by the acid in the stomach. So it helps us digest food. So it's just amazing how the body has protected itself from this acid and yet is very functional. We need it to survive.
Is it true that spicy foods can lead to an ulcer, or is that a wives' tale?
No, it's not. It's not a wives' tale. You know, it is true. It can cause more inflammation. So, you know, certainly individuals who have a peptic ulcer and then take spicy foods, it's even going to be worse because now you have this irritated area without the protection, and you're putting spicy foods right on top of it that often do have another very low pH. So you're putting acid on top of an open sore, and certainly that can help.
We're getting our weekly briefing from Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. We will probably get some news as soon as tomorrow about the latest COVID vaccine. What do we think is going to be announced this week, Doc?
Oh, yeah, I think it'll be announced that it's going to be available, that it's been proved to be effective, and we'll probably be seeing people get shots in their arms by the end of the week. So very promising. Just because we're starting to see cases creep up a little bit here. So trying to protect those who need the protection and the opportunity to get that shot should be very easily accessible.
Will this vaccine be effective against the new strains we've been hearing about?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When we look at the vaccine that we're actually going to get is going to be towards that XBB strain. That was the strain that was circulating in the early spring, mid-spring, and early summer. So that's what they based it on, which was great. Now we have the BA2.86 circulating right now. And the concern was there were so many mutations with this strain. Would the vaccine work? And it certainly worked two very important things. One, it looks like the vaccine is going to work quite well against it. And two, BA2.86 is not as contagious, it appears, as XBB. So certainly this is going to be much better than what we normally see with flu shots, where we're happy with if we get a 30-40% match. It appears that this is going to be much better than that.
So we're calling this the COVID booster, but what about people who have not had a COVID shot for a long period of time now? How will this vaccine work with them?
Yeah, so, you know, there are very few people who are totally COVID naive. In other words, they either haven't had an infection or they haven't had a vaccine. That small group, whoever they may be, certainly this is going to be the vaccine that you're going to get. The other vaccines are gone now. We're not even making them anymore. We're not producing them. They are gone. So this is going to be more like flu, Bob, where we see what strain is circulating because we know it's going to continue to mutate, see which variant is the predominant variant, and make the shot appropriate for that. Mm-hmm. The bigger concern is going to be, I think, how long is this one going to last, and are we going to need a booster, you know, like we have in the past, you know, 6 to 8 months after this vaccine? And only time is going to tell to see if we have any more variants that come out or how the immunity sticks with our body if it doesn't wane as it has in the past.
I'm reading that the variant is not more contagious and basically shows mild symptoms in patients, but then the numbers are up for hospitalizations and cases, aren't they?
Yes. So it's interesting. The contagiousness does not appear to be bad. However, in the UK, where they're already giving boosters now, they started boosters last week, they have noticed outbreaks in nursing homes. So people in close contact, probably highly stressed areas, individuals who are immunocompromised, those are the individuals that they're seeing being hospitalized. They haven't had any deaths, but they're certainly seeing hospitalizations. And here we're seeing slight increases as well. You know, we're talking here at CDH, we got down to zero COVID patients in the hospital probably maybe a month and a half ago. And now we're running probably 12, 15 a day. So quite a big bump, but still well short of our 150 that we had, you know, you know, about a year, year and a half ago. So certainly we're starting to see some increases, which is not unexpected because, like we said, immunity wanes a little bit. People are going to get this. And if they have any other comorbidity, be it heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, we are going to start to see those more severe cases rise a little bit as well. So certainly anybody with comorbidities should be getting the booster as soon as possible.
I know there is a lot of research going on as far as long COVID is concerned. Anything new to report on that?
No, you know, a lot is going on, and we're starting to look at, when we're looking at long COVID, it's kind of like saying cancer, right? Because we have lung cancer, we have prostate cancer, we have breast cancer. Well, long COVID is the same. So what we're seeing now, especially even at Northwestern, is we're seeing long COVID cases being broken down into specific departments. So individuals who have long COVID with a lung problem, they're seeing pulmonary doctors. What this has done, it's allowed us to cohort these patients to now not only look back to see what were the triggers for this, but also to try new medications and new treatments. So certainly those in the neurologic ones where we're having cognitive, where we're having brain fog, we see studies going on now where we're actually treating those individuals with medication for a longer period of time, Paxlovid for weeks instead of just 5 days. So certainly we're looking at options here. And the number of long COVID cases, fortunately, had decreased. But what we did see is we saw a bump about 6 months afterwards. So interesting to see what's going to play out with long COVID, and hopefully we'll start to soon have some designated modalities depending on which type of long COVID you have for treatment options.
I'm not sure this question can be answered yet, but I'll ask it anyway. Who is more likely to get long COVID?
Yeah, you know, interesting, Bob, we first thought the individuals who are going to get long COVID are going to be those who are the sickest, and certainly those who ended up in the hospital where they actually had damage to their lungs and their heart. We see those individuals with long COVID. What's unusual is individuals who have mild cases actually seem to have more of the neurologic ones, the loss of taste or smell, the little bit of brain fog. Those are the ones that we're trying to say, wow. But we understand that COVID was, you know, situated more in the back of our throat, close to the olfactory nerve, close to the brain. So we're seeing that those mild cases or moderate cases end up with some of the neurologic ones, where the CART in the lung problems were more individuals who had severe illness where actual damage was done to those organs.
Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, always appreciate the information. Have a good week.
You got it, Bob. We'll talk soon.